Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
All right, well, on the world stage, it certainly seems China is going to be one of the next big things, maybe India as well. It's got the big growing economy, rapid development, but as that country moves forward, there are those who are being left behind, particularly the disabled. Every year, hundreds of thousands of Chinese babies and children with disabilities are still being abandoned as families cannot afford to care for them, or in some cases just don't even know how to. David Gotz is the founder of International China Concern. He was a junior banker before he started this work. He's in Australia now, and he's with us now on Open House. David Gotz, welcome to Open House.
Thanks, Sharon. Really good to be with you.
How did a 19-year-old junior banker at the time come to be now kind of focusing his life and investing his life in the disabled of China?
Well, I suppose it was quite a journey, really. At 19 years old, I'd been become a Christian about 3 years earlier, and that really changed my focus in life. I'd initially gone into banking thinking that obviously I wanted to have a successful career, but becoming a Christian shifted my values, and I found myself really asking questions about what would make my life meaningful. And as I thought about that and prayed about it, I found myself beginning to think beyond the shores of England and to think about parts of the world where people were still living in need and people were suffering. And China was a place that seemed to grab hold of my heart. I began to learn about that nation, learn about its people and its culture. And I really sensed in my heart that God was leading me to head to that part of the world. And so as a 19-year-old, fresh-faced, I got on a plane, I flew to Hong Kong, and I spent some time learning about the culture and learning about the people of China, and just fell passionately in love with that place.
Mm-hmm. Now, the connection with the disabled children of China. You went to China. When did you first get exposed then to this particular need?
It was probably about 2 years after I'd arrived in China. I spent my first 2 years learning to speak Mandarin.
Oh, so you actually moved there full-time, you know, basically up and moved and placed yourself there.
Exactly. It wasn't quite a one-way ticket, but I went there knowing that I was going to be there for the long term. Mm. And so after spending some time in China, I then focused on studying Mandarin so that I'd be able to speak the language, which is really a prerequisite if you're going to live and work in China. And it was at the end of that time that I connected back with a friend of mine, and she had just moved to go and live and work in an orphanage in southern China. And as she told me a little bit about the work that she was doing, I really felt in my heart that there was an opportunity there for me. And so I found myself saying to her, I want to come and see what you're doing. I want to come and see firsthand the children that you're working with. And at that point, I had absolutely no idea that this was going to change my life direction. I didn't think I was going to end up working with children with disabilities at that point. But as I walked through the gates of that orphanage, my life just went through a dramatic transformation, a huge change. I hadn't really known what to expect when I arrived there. I walked into an orphanage expecting to see children that, yes, they'd lost their parents. Yes, obviously that's a painful thing. But children are resilient, and with good care, they rebound. And I expected to hear laughter. I expected to hear children playing, maybe to hear children crying. Still, obviously, the grief of losing their parents, perhaps still very fresh. But what I wasn't prepared for was the silence when I walked into that orphanage. Hmm. I walked through a gate into a courtyard, and I looked around, and I saw children sitting lifelessly just on the ground. I walked through rooms and rooms of babies, abandoned babies, and I remember looking down into the faces of these babies, little babies a few days old or a few weeks old, and realizing that they'd already given up. They were malnourished, they were neglected, they were covered in skin diseases, they were dirty. Their clothing was just literally rags. And I looked down into the faces of these babies, and where you expect to see a small child or small baby seek out eye contact with you, they'd just already given up. They had no hope left. Mm-hmm. And I realized as I looked into the faces of those babies that they were going to die, that they would only be there maybe 2 more weeks or maybe 2 more months. But then they would pass away. And that deeply impacted me. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. And as I moved on through the orphanage, through different sections, seeing different groups of children, with every room that I went in, my heart was broken over and over again. I walked into a courtyard where there were children 6, 7 years old with disabilities, tied onto metal frame chairs, bound at the wrists, bound at the feet. Mm-hmm. And they were skeletal. And I remember bending down and looking into the eyes of those children and just seeing that the light of life had been extinguished already. You could tell that these children had nothing left to live for. I remember looking into a barred room and seeing teenagers, 12, 13 years old, naked and dirty, just scampering around almost like animals. Mm. And when I asked, you know, what's going on with these children, I was told, well, you know, they have mental illness. We don't know what to do. So we lock them in this room and we leave them.
And this was an orphanage.
That's right.
That your friend was involved in?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. She'd been working as a social worker, helping organise some international adoptions from that orphanage.
Yeah.
But when she saw the condition of the children that she was working with, she knew that she needed to be there.
Was it a state-run orphanage?
Yeah, okay,
and she was working there,
You know, and this is 17...
I mean, like, no matter what you see, I mean, if you see that, I mean, that's going to break your heart and move at least the very basic human instinct that we actually have to somehow do something, or it'll just overwhelm you and you just have to run out of there and say, I can't do anything because it's just way too big.
Exactly.
You chose to do the former.
Well, I wanted to do the latter, to be perfectly honest. Mm. I remember coming out of that place that day and realizing the stream of children being abandoned into the orphanages in China was overwhelming.
Mm.
You just feel so inadequate when you look at the need. And I wanted to run away.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd love to give you sort of the story of me immediately saying, yes, I'm going to do this and commit my life to it. But to be honest, there were 6 months of wrestling, of asking myself the question, do I want to live in amongst children that are dying? Can I make a difference? Can we ever make a difference in something so big? And I remember coming to a very specific moment where I felt, you know, I can't do this. And just, you know, that quiet voice in my heart speaking back to me, God's voice saying, you know, you can't do this, but if you commit yourself to it, I'll bless it and I'll do something great.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 17 years ago. And that put my feet on the road on a very specific journey.
Yeah.
One, to bring three very simple things to China's abandoned and disabled: love, hope, and opportunity. And that's what we seek to do.
Mm-hmm. David Gotz is the founder of International China Concern. And this is Open House right across the nation. Tell me about then the context of why so many children are being abandoned in China, and then in particular so many disabled children, which is really your target.
That's
really
right.
It's really what you're focusing your energies on. Now, we've all heard about the one-child policy. Now, the status of the one-child policy is actually kind of starting to be rescinded, isn't it?
Yeah, it's things are changing in China. Certainly when I started 17 years ago, the one-child policy was a large factor in the abandonment of children. There were lots and lots of healthy baby girls that were coming into the system because the parents wanted a baby boy. A baby boy is you know, grows up to marry and have a family and then will financially support you in old age. And so that is the desire of most Chinese family, to have a son. And when you only have one opportunity, then the temptation can be to abandon a baby girl and try again. And so that was the reason why many, many hundreds of thousands of baby girls were flooding into the system. That's changed these days. There aren't so many healthy baby girls coming into the system. Some of that just practically is now that, you know, girls are valued more. The culture is changing. Mm. Some of it is down to sex selective abortion, where there will be babies aborted because their gender is female.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they try again to have a boy. So, yes, in the beginning, it was a lot of healthy baby girls, but always still with a large population of children with disabilities. And that's very much now the majority of the population that comes into China's orphanages. Why are children with disabilities abandoned? Right now in China, there's just not the infrastructure or services to support families that give birth to a child with a disability. So, for instance, here in Australia, if you had a child born with some kind of special needs, you would instantly have doctors, social workers, children development officers, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, speech pathologists working with you to give your child every opportunity. But in China, when you hear that diagnosis from the doctor, the doctor walks out of the room and you are completely alone.
Mm-hmm.
There's no social workers, there's no counsellors, there's no therapists, there's no where to go, no one to help. And within the culture, there's not really a tolerance for imperfection. And so any child with any kind of disability, really, you know, there's a lot of pressure put on the family, almost from the very beginning, to abandon.
Mm.
Even from within the family, other family members saying, you know, get rid of the child.
Yeah.
We have families that have kept, you know, have kept their children that have a disabled child. And those families say to us, I don't even go outside during the daytime because of the comments and the pressure that I'll get.
There's a certain shaming aspect to
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so families, they may want to hang on to their child that has a disability, but they get more and more desperate as time goes on. They're isolated, they're alone, they're unsupported. They've got pressure from society, pressure from the family. It's costing them financially. They've got no assistance at all. And so you can imagine the desperation grows until one day the father takes the child and walks out of the home, and he goes to the railway station and he puts the child down and he walks away.
Walks away, dear me.
Brokenhearted.
Yeah, dear me. So then your organisation comes along, and here you are, you know, originally this 19-year-old junior banker, heartbroken, call of God to do something. What does a banker do to actually help that family? Well, let's talk about the child first, and we'll talk about prevention in a second. But what did you then do to start to deal with these, in God's eyes, precious, precious beings that are then kind of thrown on the scrap heap of society in China?
Well, I'll be honest and say, like most people, when you look at an issue like this, you don't know where to start. And so, you know, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. That's the Chinese proverb. And so we just began to take single steps. We got alongside the Chinese government. We explained to them, we as an organization believe these children are important. Can we show you the potential they have? Can we work with them? Would you open up an opportunity for us as an organization to come alongside, to provide homes that they can live in, good nutrition, physical and occupational therapy that will maximize their physical abilities, medical care so that we can deal with the medical challenges that they have, vocational training as they grow so that they can maybe move into employment one day. And we came alongside the government and essentially came to serve, to offer these services that currently China doesn't have right now. And the government at that time, I don't know if they knew really what to make of us, because on the one hand, children with disabilities don't have a lot of value in China, and so why bother to try and save the life? And yet, you know, at that time, China was also changing and opening up to the West, and they were hungry to learn and hungry to develop. And so they wanted everything that we could bring. And so we found ourselves welcomed with open arms and suddenly in a partnership with the Chinese government, working closely with them to address these needs and give children with disabilities a future. And today, you know, that work has grown to be a significant work that's helping hundreds and hundreds of children.
How many people do now, and what kind of people work with you now, and how many?
Well, children that we care for right now, we probably have about 450 children that are currently under the care of the organisation. So a good chunk of those children will be actually in residence, in homes that we as an organisation run, receiving services that we as an organisation provide, everything from medical care, therapy, education, vocational training. But we also have children that are still with their families in the community, and we work and support those families, providing the services that you would expect to get here in Australia to those families so that they don't have to make that desperate choice.
Which and would be the best case scenario, really, isn't it? If you can actually support the families and support the child within the original family.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we've best worked. Setting. Yeah, we've worked and tried to do all that we can for children that have been abandoned, and that will always be our heart. But we recognise that unless we address those root causes, this is just going to continue. And so we've been very privileged to launch one of the first abandonment prevention programmes within the country, working again in partnership with the Chinese government and showing them, look, if you get alongside these families, just give them a little, they don't need a lot, then these families will stay together. It reduces the burden on the government, on the orphanages, and we see these families happy, healthy, full of hope, believing that their child has a future. And that is a wonderful gift to be able to give a family that originally thought their life was just going to be full of pain and suffering.
Yes. Is there any role there for some sort of campaign in terms of just starting to change attitudes as well? Or is it just, it has to happen from the grassroots where you, the local community has to see that one family has been able to do it with their child, and maybe then we won't kind of abandon our child if they're actually disabled or something like that?
Yeah, well, as an organisation, we work on lots of different levels. Everything we do really is advocating for children with disabilities. So we're constantly talking with government about how they can improve the services that are being provided, and the projects that we run are models really that the government can replicate in other contexts or other cities. So that's one of the ways we sort of advocate. But yes, what we also do is get down into the community. We integrate children that have been abandoned, that have disabilities, into community-based group homes so that they're living in the regular community, interacting just as they would here in Australia. But then we also get out into the universities. We share the stories of children that are tremendously courageous despite the challenges that they face. Maybe I can share one story of a boy called Chen Shi. His English name is John. Came to us when he was about 6 years old, in a wheelchair, unable to walk. And actually, when we met him, not even in a wheelchair, pulling himself across the ground, literally desperate. And he came to live with us. This is 15 years ago now. So he's a young man now. That young man just graduated from a Chinese university with a degree in computer graphic design. Mm. This young man, without the help that he received, would have died. He would have died. He would not have lived. But through the love and nurture and the education that he received, he actually accomplished something that a lot of Chinese people that have no disability never accomplish. You know, he got to go to university. Wasn't that we sort of greased anyone's palm to do it, but because he worked hard and because he believed that he could do something with his life. And what's absolutely amazing is not only did the university accept him, but he was voted the most popular student in his year.
Good on him.
You know, so I really believe that these children have tremendous potential, and as we love them and give them this hope and opportunity that they need, they actually can become a tremendous testimony to the people of China about disability.
Yes, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people listening and saying, oh, I wonder if I can get involved. I mean, do you actually look for volunteers from Australia with particular skills to actually be a part of the work over there?
Yes, we do. ICC has had an office in Australia for a number of years now, and we have representatives in different states across the country. And there are lots of ways that people can be involved. Obviously, we love people to get involved in whichever way suits them. So whether that's through praying for the work that we do, if that's something that they really have a heart for, whether it's through sponsoring a child. We run a child sponsorship program that enables you to connect with a specific individual in China, one of our children, and to learn of their journey and to walk with them on that journey through providing them some financial support. We also have opportunities for people to go. We organise teams, usually 4 or 5 times a year, where you can go for 14, 16 days and just get involved hands-on. You know, pick up those babies that need that love. Work with children that have disabilities. Play games. Tell them stories. Bottom line is they just need to know that they're loved, that they're not forgotten. Mm. And a great opportunity that we have for involvement is coming up actually this September. It's an event called Walk the Wall. And our idea, our initial aim was, if we could get 650 people to walk 10 kilometres, then in one day we could basically walk the length of the Great Wall of China. Mm-hmm. And so we started this a few years ago with the idea of maybe we can get 650 people to commit to doing that. 4 years later, we actually have thousands of people now around the world that walk with us every September and raise around $250,000 Australian dollars in that one day. Okay. And we have these walks happening right across the country. And so if the listeners are interested, they can certainly go to our website and learn more about that event.
Okay. And for people long-term thinking with you, I mean, what are you looking for, particular skills?
We look for people who have, first of all, a heart and a passion to help.
Right.
So if people have a heart and a passion, then come talk to us. There are lots of opportunities, whether it's for 2 months, 2 years, or whether it's long term. Of course, if you're a nurse, a doctor, a paediatrician, a therapist, and a special educator, you're the kind of person that we want to talk to. Right. We want to see whether you could bring your skills and be part of changing children's lives, but also changing a nation and helping it to find its destiny.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, great to talk to you. Inspiring to talk to you.
Thank you.
All the best for the work ahead of you. David Gotz, founder of the International China Concern Organization. ChinaConcern.org is the website if you want to find out about that Walk the Wall project or anything else about the organization. ChinaConcern.org.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.